This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, June 24th, 2014. I'm Caleb Brown. The return to a stable dollar may be a difficult task, but it's essential for reestablishing it as a trustworthy unit of account and a measure of wealth. Steve Forbes, editor-in-chief of Forbes Media, is co-author of the new book, Money: How the Destruction of the Dollar Threatens the Global Economy and What We Can Do About It. We spoke last week. You talk about stability a lot in this book, and I think it's clear that the instability of the U.S. dollar has done a lot of harm. It's fueled a lot of government spending, fueled a lot of militarism, even consumer spending. So what do you tell people who look at the situation where we are now with the U.S. dollar and they say, look, it's still the reserve currency of the world. We don't need to worry about this. That seems to be the prevailing attitude.
Well, you can go through what you've accumulated in the past. You can rely on the past and before you collapse. It took Rome several centuries to undo what the previous generations had done there. And one of the purposes of the book was to make the point that even if you get it right on spending, on taxes, on regulation, if you don't get it right on the money, everything else is undermined. And one of the things that's happened in the last 40 years is that U.S. growth rates are less than they were historically. If we'd maintained historic growth rates, the U.S. economy today would be 50% larger. You wouldn't necessarily need two incomes to do what one income did in previous generations. And you wouldn't have the massive growth of government. Whenever there's unstable money, you get economic crises, which governments use to expand. So the book wants to get across, what is money? How do we make it stable, like 60 minutes in an hour for clocks, and help get this country and the world back on a path of growth and liberty?
Now, when you talk about stability, we should be really clear, first of all, that you are not talking about the decades-long steady inflation of the U.S. dollar, right?
Stability here means a stable value of the dollar, fixed value, like stable number of inches in a foot, 12. Scales are stable or supposed to be. Clocks are stable. And so money is a measurement of wealth. Money is a measurement of value. And if that measurement is uncertain or changes arbitrarily, it erodes trust because marketplace transactions are based on trust, especially with strangers. You don't get the kind of investment, productive investment in the future. And so in frustration, people turn to government and government gets bigger. And liberty is undermined.
Cato's president, John Allison, just about every time I hear him talk about money and banking, says three things, basically: end the Fed, allow free banking, and return to a gold standard. In your book, you say the Fed could have a useful role, quote unquote, at least for now. So what does that mean? What is the Steve Forbes plan for a stable dollar?
Going on a gold standard means simply that the dollar has a fixed value, and the role of the Fed is simply to maintain that value. So let's say the price is $1,250 an ounce, picking a number. All it means is if gold goes above $1,250, the Fed doesn't create so much money. If it goes below $1,250, creates a little more. In other words, lets the markets determine. Money supply, however you wish to define it, which is all over the place, the numerous definitions, but however you define it, should be flexible. If you have a vibrant economy, you need more money. Money represents, it's a claim on products and services. Money represents what people have already created, like a coat check in a restaurant has no intrinsic value. It represents a claim on a coat. Money represents claim on products and services. So gold standard, that's all the Fed would do, deal with the occasional panic, which occurs every 75 years, and that's it. When the Fed was created, all it was supposed to do was to provide cash to meet seasonal needs of banks because of crazy regulation at the time. We couldn't meet seasonal needs in an agricultural economy. Keep it on the gold standard, and that was a deal with panics like 1907, which the British had taught us in the 1860s how you do, boom, quick, bring your collateral in, pay above market rate, crisis pass, you pay the loan back. Done. That's all the Fed was supposed to do.
All right. Our present monetary policy has been consistently punitive towards savers, and has encouraged people to borrow more money than they otherwise would. What do you see as the long-term effects of that?
Well, when you don't have real economic growth of the kind of growth that we're capable of, you do have people taking on more debt because they're told it's a good thing to do. You do have misdirected capital, and you get a stagnant economy.
Our current tax code also rewards debt. Do you think that's a good idea? I'm thinking specifically of things like the mortgage interest deduction, deductibility of interest for businesses, that sort of thing.
If you cleaned out the tax code and did something like I propose, a flat tax, just have exemptions for adults and for kids, you should be allowed to keep enough to meet the basic necessities of life before government comes after you. And that's it. And that way you can have a very low rate, you have a vibrant economy, and you wouldn't have politicians taking money from you and then giving it back to you, saying if you do this, you get to keep your money, like giving dogs biscuits as a treat for certain kinds of behavior. People in a free market, in a free country, can do that on their own. So people's behavior, it's fine. Now, human nature being what it is, people will do crazy things, but in a free market, that sorts itself out. You don't need politicians coming to the rescue.
You said this moving away from our current monetary policy to what you propose, you say would take how long?
It could be fairly quick. And when you say current monetary policy, that is very flattering. It assumes there is a policy. The Fed operates on whim. Whatever current theory they like, they go follow it. Quantitative easing was a brand new thing. Suppressing interest rates across the board, we hadn't done that since world wars. And it has led to a form of credit allocation. So, again, the Fed's role should be very, very basic. People will do fine in a free world. I mean, we had plenty of crises in 180 years leading up to 1971, yet we achieved over time enormous growth rates, better than any other developed country. And we can go forward with that again.
You had a couple of, I'll say, less than kind words for this new currency, Bitcoin, that has emerged recently. Can you give me your sort of big picture take on that?
Well, I think Bitcoin is a high-tech cry for help. When you have an unstable dollar, then people look for alternatives. And also in this day and age, people do like the idea of a thing called privacy. So Bitcoin emerged, but its very volatility makes it less than useful as money because it doesn't have that stability you need. If you got paid in Bitcoins, and one of our online contributors has done this from time to time, tried to live on a Bitcoin, it's like taking shares of stock. You don't know what you're getting, and you don't know when you buy something, the seller doesn't know what he or she is getting. So I think Bitcoin is – you'll see sons of or daughters of Bitcoins in the future. And in terms of our whole payment system, which is still very antiquated, we think things are very fast today when you do the card swipes and things like that. But it's a very antiquated system. It's still not seamless yet, but we'll get there.
What are the first couple of steps that should be taken to get to the stable dollar that we all want?
Well, I think part of it is, and this is one reason why we wrote the book, is to get the knowledge out there. So one of the reasons we lost the previous gold standard was people did not know why it worked. They did not understand money, and they did not know how to defend it. And so they blew it up unnecessarily. It was ignorance that did it in.
Right, but as a matter of federal policy.
Well, first you announce it that we are going to do what we did for 180 years, and then there are various ways you can do it. You can have a 6-month, 12-month transition period. You can have a big conference or something, but you have to make it clear it's going to be done. It has to be when you pick a rate. It has to be enacted into law. And other things that have to be done is remove obstacles to alternative currencies. That is a safety backdrop. Also have a redeemability. not like a classical gold standard, but you should be able to take your dollars to the government and buy gold bullion. I'd put a high commission on it because I don't want the government competing with private dealers. But and the government should could, as an ultimate safety net, have the government have to keep a certain amount, 50 million ounces, 100 million ounces, just so people can believe that over time we're going to have a really stable system.
We would have, on a gold standard, a steady deflation over time. Do you agree with that?
Well, deflation, we got to get definitions right.
Sure.
Because this is where there's so much confusion.
Sure, sure.
Inflation means you reduce the value of the currency.
Right.
Deflation means you increase the value of the currency. Either one is bad. We want a inflationary policy, not a deflationary inflation. We like inflation. And so over time, you may find that specific products go down in price. You take an iPad today. As people have pointed out, if you tried to make that thing or an iPhone 25 years ago, it would cost you $3.5-4 million. Today, it's a few hundred bucks. So that's productivity. Productivity is not deflationary. Or if you go to McDonald's and then go to, say, the 21 Club, you'll notice at the 21 Club, hamburger meat is about four times expensive per ounce as it is in Mickey D's. So the 21 Club, is that inflationary? Is Mickey D's deflationary? No, it's what markets are saying certain kinds of products are valued at. So productivity would mean that with certain products, they'd go down. But one of the amazing things, and this is where people get a little confused, is the amazing thing in the marketplace is we're always improving things. The automobile today is a very different thing than it was 20 years ago with all the chips and everything else in there. We don't realize how easy it is to drive versus what it was 40 or 50 years ago. You take for example, the iPhone. When that came along, the initial price was $499, much more expensive than the typical phone you got from a cell phone you got from Verizon or AT&T or T-Mobile or whatever. And does that mean that inflationary? No. You're paying for design. You're paying for huge new features. How do you capture that in a consumer price index? You
well,
don't.
Right.
So you'll get more for less. That's markets always allowed to work, always turn luxuries into commodities.
Steve Forbes is co-author of Money: How the Destruction of the Dollar Threatens the Global Economy and What We Can Do About It. You can watch a forum for the book at our website, cato.org.